This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
You're listening to the Productive Muslim Podcast, Season 4, Episode 2. Assalamu alaikum, Productive Muslims. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Mifra Maruf, and I'm back with another episode. So in this episode, I have for you a productive Muslim interview. These are interviews in which we speak to exemplary individuals from all walks of life. We get an insight into their productivity and take away lessons that we can implement. And joining me on the show today is Sister Catherine Jones. She's a mother of 5 children, a certified parenting by connection instructor, and a certified Inside Out Paradigm Coach. She's also the founder of the Peaceful Parenting Academy, the ME First Summit, and the Great Ramadan Giveaway, as well as a business performance coach for Muslim women who've wished to build a 6-figure business. Mashallah, many things. So without further ado, let's start our interview. Assalamu alaikum, Catherine. How are you?
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Feeling pretty awesome, alhamdulillah.
Alhamdulillah, that's really good. Awesomeness always makes an interview even more awesome. So we're looking forward to that. So let's just start off with an introduction. So can you tell us about yourself and what you do?
Okay, so some of you may already have come across me. So I'm a mum of 5 children. My youngest is 7. My eldest is turning 20, believe it or not. So I am the Peaceful Parenting Coach. And I teach people how to parent from a peaceful place inside. It's something I'm really, really passionate about. And I have my 5 children to make sure I practice what I preach every single day.
Yeah.
I am also a business performance coach for Muslim sisters that are wanting to build a 6-figure business. And that is something I'm also very passionate about because I believe, well, it's not that I believe. I know we have absolutely amazing Muslim sisters in the Ummah. And I know that living in the West these days, it's getting harder and harder for us to really work in our field outside the home because of the negative rhetoric towards Muslims and the difficulty to practice our deen in an office setting, often the issue of free mixing, all this sort of thing, but also the juggling of family and being tied away from the home when you have children. And so we have a lot of sisters that have amazing skills, abilities, experience, qualifications that can use those to do something extraordinary from home. And so I am really passionate also about helping them make that happen. And for another reason as well, because if the world sees how amazing Muslim women are, because we're out there doing these amazing things, it's going to challenge their thinking about how they view Muslim women, what they've heard in the media. And it's going to be a really awesome way of doing dawah just by being ourselves out there. And so my, I guess, experience in business coaching comes from the fact that, firstly, I've had to work really hard to understand how to do online marketing in order to build the Peaceful Parenting Academy.
Yeah.
But also because of 13 years of being in the IT industry, I have a lot of technical skills that I bring into it. So it makes it possible for me to do the technical stuff. Not that I'm allowed to do that anymore. I've got my team to do that. That was one of the hardest things to do, was to let go of that and yeah, allow us all to do it so I could be more productive while we're talking about productivity. So that's kind of me in a nutshell. I'm a mum of 5 and I run 2 businesses from home. I am an active community member in my community. So for instance, next week I'm doing a mosque tour with a bunch of grade 2s, about 80 grade 2s, they're 8-year-olds.
So one of the things that I want to speak to you about in this interview is about goals and accomplishments. So can you tell us about a goal or accomplishment that you've had in your life that you're proud of?
It's still a work in progress and I'm really proud of what I've accomplished so far. And I have not so much a goal, but a vision for where it's going to go. And that's the Peaceful Parenting Academy. The reason I'm really, I guess it's an accomplishment that I'm really happy to share, is because it's taken a lot of persistence, a lot of consistent chipping away at it, a lot of learning, a lot of investing to get it to where it is now, where I have my Peaceful Parenting Academy, where I have people across the world learning to parent their children from a peaceful place inside. I'm super passionate about it because, honestly, what we're teaching in Peaceful Parenting is the answer to all the problems in the world. Because what we are doing is teaching parents how to manage their own emotions, manage what's happened to them, the hurts that they've had, so that they don't pass them on to their children. And secondly, teach them how to support their children emotionally so that they develop to their full potential, both emotionally and intellectually. There's so much focus on child development in the intellectual sense. Like, we want children to memorize the whole Quran. We want them to be great avid readers. We want them to be able to write really well. We want them to be able to be, you know, do maths really well. You know, so there's a lot of focus on teach. And that's the intellectual development. But there's not a lot of focus on the emotional development. And the two actually go very much hand in hand, and people don't realize that. So teaching this kind of way of parenting, it's the solution to ending domestic violence. It's the solution to ending, you know, bad family patterns that are being passed down generation for generation. So I'm really passionate about that, because myself, I've been through experiencing what it's like having inherited the family, my own family's patterns.
Yeah.
And things happened to me that's happened generation after generation of women in my family. And I made this commitment when I was 17, I was going to break that pattern. And I actually had no clue what I meant when I was actually, I just wanted to break the pattern. I didn't know what that was going to mean. And so this whole peaceful parenting is the breaking of those family patterns, the breaking of the negative family patterns. If you've got good family patterns, like love, of course, we want to keep them. I'm talking about negative stuff. I'm talking about the abuse of children, or the neglect of children, or the addictions, or the violence, and all these other things that go on in society, even in our Muslim families, even though it's just so contrary to our religion. So it's the answer. It's the solution. So to me, you know, to have now established the Peaceful Parenting Academy, to have quite a lot of students now having gone through the academy, having some of my students now taking leadership roles in my academy, meaning we're getting to that maturity, that we have other leaders, that they've come from within the community. It's really exciting for me having achieved that. My goal, or my vision, I really don't talk in terms of goals. I talk more in terms of visions, and I can explain more about that later when we talk about productivity. But my vision is a peaceful parenting revolution in the Muslim world. I'm actually want to start a revolution.
So
I'm not there yet.
This sounds like such a noble path and a vision that you're taking on. And I'm interested to know, like, can you take us behind the scenes and actually tell us how you made it happen? Because, like, a lot of us have, like, you know, great visions and great goals that we want to go towards and pursue. But it's, if we were to take a look at your particular example that you're giving and what it took to get to where you are right now.
So anyone who has like a vision, all I can say first up is you have to be so passionate about it if you're going to make it happen. Because there are going to be so many what you'll perceive as failures, but they're actually just life lessons that you're going to go through to get there. You're going to, as a quote from Zohra Sarwari, when I met her at the Twins of Faith conference, a quote from her is, failing your way to success. And that's pretty much how it is. So you have to have basically the grit and the determination to make it happen. You have to really believe in that goal and be really passionate about it to make it happen, because life keeps happening. And this is what I find particularly for women as a challenge, is because we have families, we have children around us, we have responsibilities, we are the carers, tend to be the carers in society.
Yes.
Life happens, and life gets in the way of actually reaching your goals. And so it's about really establishing how you can balance life and keep on task and on your goals.
Yeah.
And the way I've done that is I've made sure all the way along I've had the right people helping me, whether that is helping me in terms of doing things with me, or in terms of investing in coaches, the people who are going to teach me what I need to know, who are going to back me, who are going to push me. Yeah. So because I want to build a revolution, I've actually established a really complex network of people who I rely upon for various elements of my business. So I have a coach who helps me with copywriting, because you're getting your message out there in a clear way, in a way that people are going to relate to, is totally critical. I have my coach that I work with that I am helps me with strategy. So while I'm really good at strategy because of my IT type of analytical background, when it comes to your own business, it's very hard to be strategic on your own because you get so lost into all of your ideas. I have so many ideas, I want to do them all, and I need somebody to go, well, those ideas aren't going to get to you to where you want to go, but these ideas are, these are the ones to focus on. So someone that can look at the bigger picture and kind of help you prune off all of the wonderful bright shiny objects that you want to follow instead of actually do what you need to be doing. I also have accountability in place, so I have people who are keeping me accountable that I'm answering to every week in what I'm going to achieve, because I am really pushing some really big visions in what I want to achieve with my business. Now, not everybody perhaps needs to go to that length, but you do need to put that support structure in place. You do need people. If you think that you can just sit on your own at home and suddenly build an empire when you're trying to juggle husbands, in-laws, parents, children, and all the challenges that they bring to the table, and the community and everything else, your own health, you know, your own physical health as well. You're dreaming if you don't think that you need help to do it. There's no way I would have achieved all of this if I'd tried to do it on my own.
Yeah, so pretty much whatever you want to do, you can't do it alone. Like, you need to have people. I mean, you can't just live that hermit lifestyle and say, hey, look, I'm going to do this and I'm going to achieve this and I don't need anyone's help.
And anyone who thinks that that's how it's worked for anyone out there, what you've got to realize is, there's in all of these amazing people out there, they're like the figurehead of a business, but behind them will be...
Yeah, behind the scenes there are always many people. Amazing
team of people.
Yeah.
And the thing that I've always had in my mind is working towards the people that are my team, being from the Ummah, being my sisters in Islam. And I mean, that isn't quite the full case at this moment. I have coaches and things that aren't Muslim because they've got what I need right now in terms of my own learning and in terms of pushing me. But as far as within my business, being the leaders, the other parent coaches, the people that are going to be a part of the Peaceful Parenting Academy, I want them to come from within the community so that it's also empowering Muslim women within the community to have their own living as well.
All right. So what would you say in all of this has been your biggest challenge, and how did you overcome it? Like, your own personal struggle that you've had.
We've had, it's mostly the children, because I have children of all ages and we've had all sorts of challenges. So we've gone through so much. My first three children and I, we went through domestic violence. So my first marriage was violent. We had to, so as a result of that, there's been a lot of repercussions in my children's own emotional well-being as a result of the hurt that they experienced from being in that marriage. So we've gone through a lot of angry teens. teens are very distracting. We've gone through a lot of racism in this country. We've gone through both of my teen boys being racially assaulted by the police here. Mm. Now, when the police are the ones insulting you, who do you go to for help? It's actually really hard. We had to really battle the court system. And the only way we managed to make it go away was we kept insisting, get the mics off the police and hear what really happened. And eventually they backed down. But all of these things, you can imagine, are very stressful. And so as a result of all those things going on, I had one of my sons end up with symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, where he would just pace the whole house at night and then he couldn't get up for school in the morning, and so, and then having all these physical things. So the biggest challenge for me has been really big things happening, and that's fine, because I look at it, I go, well, you know, alhamdulillah, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has blessed me with so much resilience. He's blessed me with the knowledge of psychology to be a really strong person. So, of course, my tests are going to be big tests, aren't they? Because Allah burdens us only with what we can bear. The more we can bear, the harder the tests. It's kind of like, oh, well, you know, it's to be expected. So part of it is that attitude, is having that Islamic attitude to what's going on. The other part is not allowing yourself to just sink into those problems and instead going, there's that picture, that vision. Yeah. If I sink, how can I make that happen? It's not going to happen. So it's actually about having that mindset of, I'm not going to allow myself to get lost into all these problems. I'm not going to allow myself to sink. And part of not allowing yourself is then getting the help you need. So there was one morning that I was just having a really difficult time. There was so much happening in my business, because that's the other thing in the sort of work that I do. I have a whole lot of people who are demanding on me, who also come with big problems. It's no surprise that because I've been through domestic violence and all these sorts of things, that I end up attracting a lot of women in those sort of situations wanting to be supported. So, there was this one morning where it all got so much and I was very off track, and I ended up having a car accident, nothing big. It was between me and a pole. So it was, I just did something so stupid in a moment that I hit a pole, and it was like, okay, instead of going, panic, the car's a mess. Now this is more bills and blah, blah, blah. And then just getting lost in it. I went, that's a sign that I need to ask for help. And so before the hour was out, I messaged my coach and said, when can you book me in? I need a session. I'm off track. Things are really going off the rails. I can't let that happen. So that's what it's about. It's about knowing that these things happening isn't like, oh, woe is me, I'm being punished, or woe is me, why does it always happen to me? It's about, that's a sign I'm off track. I need to get back on track, get the help I need to do that.
That's a good way to look at it.
I mean, it was very embarrassing because my 16-year-old witnessed it and he teased me for the whole week afterwards. But, hey, that's life, you know?
It's true, that's life.
It was a wake-up call. It was waking me up to the fact that I was burning the candle at both ends. I was getting myself to breaking point, and I had to stop that happening, because the next thing would be something would happen with my health or something else would happen, and then I won't be able to keep it going. So it's about really knowing you have to ask for help and not allowing yourself to get to a place where it's almost like no return.
That's true. So with everything that you have going on in your life, how does a typical day look like for you?
So for me, because it's really hard to get work done from 3 o'clock onwards once the kids finish school, I start my day really early. So basically after Fajr prayer, there's about a 2-hour block but till it's time to get children ready for school. And so that 2-hour block, I work. And most of the time I'm either teaching, because that's a time of the day that actually works with the rest of the world. Being in Australia, unfortunately, the rest of the world are sleeping when we're awake. Yeah. I use that time to have my appointments with clients or teaching or that sort of thing. And so that's a really important time of my day. Yeah. And then once they go to school, I have another chunk of time where I get other stuff done. I still might. I don't tend to teach at that hour because only Australians are awake at that time by then. But I will have some coaching calls for those that like it late at night in the UK or in the afternoon, evening in the US, but mostly it's the time to do other elements of my business. But before that, actually, I go on a beach walk with my friend. So straight after dropping kids off, I've got to do that exercise, get that clear head. Even though it's winter, we go and we do it, even if it's raining, because that cold wind blows all the cobwebs out of our head. We feel quite refreshed afterwards.
Oh, that's nice.
And also having that connection with a friend. Like when we're walking, we're solving the world's problems. And so we have very good conversations.
Every single problem. And we also create problems too. It's
like... No. We're into problem solving. So we were...
Oh, really?
We were problem solving Pauline Hanson yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, the non-Australian audience probably don't know what we're talking about when we talk about her. She's our politician that's the thorn in the side when it comes to women. And this woman decided to wear a burqa to Parliament to make a point to try and get the burqa banned. So we were talking about that yesterday. But that's beside the point. So factoring in that social element, like connecting with someone who... It's not someone who is like an energy drain. It's like someone who's an energy boost, someone who you have really good productive conversation with, so you feel really connected and invigorated by their company. It's really important to have that in your week. So we do that 3 times a week. It's good for us physically. It's good for us emotionally. And it helps me be a lot more productive. And so then I will come home after exercising, and it'll be when I do my Facebook Lives, which is where I'm engaging with my audience and inviting them to learn more about peaceful parenting or about my business coaching. It's when I will record my programs because all the kids are at school and it's quiet unless the budgies screech, and then I have to edit out budgie screeches. So that's my quiet time to record programs or webinars and things like that. And then in the middle of the day is the time where I have my admin meetings, my checking emails, catching up on replying to Facebooks, replying to comments in the Peaceful Parenting Academy for people who are going through the programs who have questions and things. Now, the reason I factor this, because this is a very good productive thing that you need to think about, I think I got it from Brendan Burchard, is you don't do the emails and stuff at the beginning of the day.
Yeah.
Because if you do that, that means you end up running your day according to someone else's agenda of whatever's coming through your email. Yeah. Whereas if you do it at that middle of the day, there's still some time to answer things and program things in for the next day, but you still have managed to do your things for your day first before other people's priorities jump in front of you. So there's actually a key reason why that's at the tail end. And there's a new thing I'm about to put into my routine because I'm discovering I'm feeling a bit flat. See, again, this is recognizing what's going on and then putting things into practice to make sure that you can sustain your routine, sustain your to get to your goals. Because if we're pushing ourselves too hard, it's not going to work. So what I'm realizing is at the moment I've been working really intensely, that by the time the kid's coming home, I'm quite flat. And that's not fair on them. So I'm thinking about what do I factor into my day around 2:30, where I finish work and I do something to revive myself, ready for my kids to come home. Because it's not fair on them that they just get me as this flat person that's had enough of everything for the day because I started work at 5:30. That's not their fault. That's my choice. So that's, I haven't quite worked out what that is. It might come in the form of a walk or something, but it's really about factoring in time to switch off of work so that I can switch into family mode and be there and be connecting and be engaged with my children, because they'll need me in that afternoon, evening time.
That's true. Well, we're actually near the ending of our interview. And so before we end off, I just want to ask you a few like quick questions.
Sure.
And okay, so the first one that I have here is, what is a book, a video, or article that you've come across recently that has helped you in your personal growth?
Book, video, or article? I'd have to say that one book, because I don't get a lot of time to read books. I tend to try and get to listen to books in the car when I'm driving.
Yeah.
But one book is, I've just forgotten the name, had a mind blank. It's by Dan Segal, and it's all about the teen brain. And that was really helpful because it really helped me understand my teenagers better.
Yeah.
It's actually something I've now incorporated in my Peaceful Parenting for Teens program as well, because I think it's really important for parents to understand this. So it's helped me be a lot more patient and understanding with my teenagers, which in turn has actually helped them be a lot more on track. So that has a big impact, because that impacts everything. When the teenagers are on track, everything runs so much smoother. So that brainstorm, that's what it's called, brainstorm.
All right.
So Ernst Gull is a neuroscientist.
We'll add that into our show notes as well.
He's a neuroscientist, so he talks about the brain and what's going on in their brain.
Yeah, because there's a lot happening in their brains during teenage time.
Yes, and it makes a lot of sense what they've discovered. It's not what we think it is. It's not the hormones, and it's not lack of impulse control. It's something completely different. I'm going to leave it with that level of
you can't leave it hanging. So what is it? Because I always thought it was hormones and impulse. And
that's right, everyone thinks that. So the brain is going through quite a transformation at that age. So one of the things he describes is, you know, when you do spring cleaning and the house gets messier before it gets cleaner.
Yeah.
Well, their brain is going through a pruning, which is a bit like a spring cleaning. And so things get messier before they get cleaner. So that's the first thing that he said that kind of went, oh, that makes sense, because their bedroom kind of looks like their brain, most teens anyway. But the other thing is that the dopamine levels in their brain are very different to at other times in life. They have a much lower level of normal dopamine level. Dopamine's that happy thing, the happy well-being kind of hormone that we have. Yeah. So when it's lower, there's kind of this seeking to make it higher. So that's why they're seeking to do things that are thrilling, that are going to give them a thrill. Do, you know, like be a bit rebellious and break the rules because there's a bit of a thrill in it, or drive too fast when they're getting their car license, and, you know, all these things that we think are just lack of impulse control. But no, it's them looking for that thrill to bump up their dopamine levels. And then the thing with the dopamine levels is when they get that thrill, it goes spikes much higher than for younger children and adults, you know, people at other ages. So they've got this dopamine level thing going on in their brain that's different, that makes you understand why it's not lack of impulse control. They've actually weighed up the options. They actually know of the negative, bad consequences of what they're about to do, but they still do it anyway, because there is this big waiting on the pros, because the pro is the thrill, the fit, that buzz that they get out of it. And that, so it's kind of like their balances are off, and there's more weight on the reason to do it rather than the reason not to do it when they're weighing it up in their mind.
Wow. I never knew that.
No, well, nor did I until about a year.
I think that makes a lot of sense in some things, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you see teenagers doing dumb things, it's not because they're dumb. It's because their brains are wired differently. And so our job is not to come in and criticize them, because how can you criticize someone for something that is naturally inherent in them?
That's true.
You come in and guide them. You come in and guide them.
And for how long does that go for? At what age does that kind of go down?
I gather,
out of curiosity.
I gather it's different for all kids. But I have noticed, having now had gone through four teenagers, because I have two adult stepsons, that the sort of the age between 14 and 17 seems to be the key time that it's a struggle. And guess what? In Australia, that's when they get their driver's license.
I seriously don't know how my parents were comfortable with me when I was 17 and I started driving, because I get scared off that thought. I did some crazy things in the car.
It seems to start wearing off around the age my son is now, because he's starting to become more sensible. He's at 19 now, turning 20.
Yeah.
But the prefrontal cortex, the thinking part of the brain, isn't fully developed until probably mid-20s. So the whole really thinking well doesn't fully mature until around 25 anyway. So our expectation of teenagers to behave like adults is unreasonable, because they're not yet. They're not mentally yet adults.
Wow, that's amazing. Like, you know when you understand something, it just allows you to have more empathy, or like be able to like rather than criticize something like, oh, why aren't you like this, or why this is not like this, but just like gaining more knowledge on that, like how that works, or you know, it can be any area, whether it be teenagers or just anything, and just understanding goes a long way.
And that's why I've now included it in my Peaceful Parenting for Teens program, along with a whole lot of other stuff that I teach, because it helps parents understand that coming down hard on your teens is actually pushing them away. It's not going to help.
That's true. You know, Catherine, there's so much I can, like, I'm so curious to pick on, but I know that the timing is just going. So I just want to end off asking a question that we ask all our guests when they come on, is that how would you define a productive Muslim?
A productive Muslim is someone who is using their time well. Productivity isn't about that you're busy. Because I think people get the mistake that being productive is being busy. If you look at the word productive, it comes from the word produce. Being productive means that you're producing something. And the first thing we should be producing is good deeds for reward from Allah, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. Making sure that when we are being busy, we're busy doing things that are producing something good, whether it's good deeds, whether it's helping us in our well-being so that we can do a better job, because that can be even rewardable. You know, we can get reward for sleeping if we make our intention that we're sleeping in order to be strong the next morning to worship Allah more better. You know, so that's being productive, is where you can turn 24 hours into the worship of Allah, that everything that you're doing is benefiting you because you're doing it with the intention to please Allah, that you're eating healthily because you want a strong body so you can worship Allah better, that you're sleeping because you want to rest your body ready to worship Allah more the next day. So even our day-to-day things, that we care for the baby, even cleaning the baby's nappy or diaper, whatever language people use, can be an act of worship because you're caring for Allah's creation. If you didn't do that, that baby is going to be uncomfortable. So when you're thinking in that term, when you're doing everything, then that's being productive.
All right, so that brings us to the end of our episode today. For any links and resources that we mentioned in this episode, you can be able to find them over at our website, productivemuslim.com. While you're there, you can also be able to find more details on how to connect with our guest. So I do hope you enjoyed this episode. Do leave us your feedback over there in our show notes, and I look forward to reading them. So that's all from me today. So inshallah, until next time, remember, be sincere and work hard. Woke up with the light, a sky so blue above my eyes, with a thankful heart. Today is another brand new